At this time, I would like to quote the illustrious poet by the name of William Michael Griffin Jr., who back in 1987, he penned a quotable that reflects how I'm feeling right now about these last few weeks. So at this time, I'd like to read his words to you listeners. Some of you might have heard him before, I'm not sure, but his quotable goes a little something like this. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a strong rhyme to step to. Think of how many weak shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm sorry I kept you. By the way, he goes by the alias of Rakim, something like that. I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's true. That's the feeling I do have. Unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, I wasn't able to produce these podcasts in the last little while. So I do apologize sincerely to you and all of my listeners. You want to know what my unforeseen circumstances was? You really want to know? Okay, to make a long story short, you know, on the basketball court, I thought recently that I was a combination of Hakeem Olajuwon and Tim Hardaway. And when I turned on my defender to spin off him, you know, and get a basket or make a play, I stepped on his foot. And he jumped backwards and took my foot with him. And at that point in time, while he was taking my foot with him on a journey that was going to eventually send me to the hospital, my ankle said, "You're definitely not Hakeem Olajuwon and Tim Hardaway." And by the time I hit the ground in the splits position, you know, I was looking more like Simone Biles. So that's the end of that short story. So while I was off, I was in bed. I was in a cast. I was feeling like Roger Murtaugh from those Lethal Weapon movies. You know, what does he say again? "I'm too old for this shit." Yeah, that's basically how I felt. That was me the last 2 to 3 weeks. Ironically enough, though, my groin is fine. So at least proves that I'm flexible. You know, maybe I should hang up my kicks and try a new career in gymnastics. What do you think? Okay, maybe I'll try yoga first. I'll take some yoga classes first. That might be better for me. Okay, so now that I've explained my break, I've been watching these NBA finals like everybody else for the past week. And I've watched both conference finals. And I'll just say a few things here. As great as the first two rounds were, the predictability of the last two rounds has dwindled my enthusiasm to the point that I can call this year's playoff experience a push. The second thing is Mike D'Antoni is a great, I'll rephrase that. Mike D'Antoni is a genius regular season coach, especially on offense. But due to his own stubbornness, he always seems to find a way to remove that genius tag from beside his name. Like every single playoffs, like clockwork. To the point that this year it was actually bothersome to me. Like it was mind blowing to me. And third, watching these finals, it really makes me think of LeBron James and the importance of his career this past decade and the impact it's had on this league. Because honestly, that narrative, I think, is more important than the finals itself, for better and for worse. So today on the AV podcast, I'm joined by both O'Neal Kamaka and Randall Walter as we discuss LeBron James' impact on today's NBA, as well as the NBA finals, plus a whole lot more. And listen, you LeBron fans, don't come for me, all right? Don't come for me. I'm going to be as impartial as I can, all right? Stop it. Celsior Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen and subscribe to the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name Celsior Ave. Make sure you click and subscribe to your podcast app and rate the shows too. 5 stars, please. 5 stars, please. And as always, to listen to more podcast shows, and to catch up on my entire catalog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Av Radio. And before we begin, this episode is dedicated to the memory of two people I went to school with at Ryerson, my friend Dee Kelly and my ex-teammate Errol Fraser, who both passed away recently from sudden illnesses, respectively within 1 month of each other. Dean was one of my first friends I made at the university, man. So Dean, my other friend Nigel, and I, we were like the three musketeers our first year together. You know, sharing crazy wild texts to each other and everything else. We had a lot of fun that first year. And he was a good dude, man, who fell to some health issues in the last few years, unfortunately, as recently as I found out. And as far as Arrow goes, listen, man, he was a great ball player, a great person, and he was a good dude that always showed love to me every single time we seen each other. You know, every single time, man, I could put my money on that. Both of these men are gone way too soon. Just way too soon. Way too soon. My condolences, my thoughts, and my prayers go out to both of their families, their children, and their loved ones. Rest in power, at peace, and with ease. Much love to both of you guys. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the Av Podcast. My first guest is the associate head coach of Oakland Collegiate. He's a St. Mary's alumnus and local legendary baller from the city of Toronto. Please welcome O'Neal Kamaka to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing good, brother. My next guest is the head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU basketball program in Brampton and former Maine Black Bear free safety. Plus, he's recently been campaigning in Sarnia to run for an unprecedented second term as the CEO of Team Lightskin. You can vote on it tonight, people. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Randall Walters to the show. Randall, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
What's going? The delegates of Team Lightskin have made a trade. We have traded Drake.
Oh, no, they didn't do that.
To the darknesses. You can have them.
You don't even want anybody back? What the hell?
Nope.
Wow. It's like that?
And I'm hitting it for a washer and dryer.
Oh, it's like that?
Yup.
That hurts, man. That hurts.
Yo, Canada's been taking too many L's, man. And on top of that, I can't carry Drake on my squad anymore, so.
Oh, that hurts. I figure you wanted somebody, Flavor Flav. It's like, you don't want nobody?
I'll take Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I've been running for this conversation. I'm running for this conversation right now.
What about Wesley Snipes? Take Wesley Snipes?
No, but I like Wesley Snipes, though, man. You can't... He did Jungle Fever. You can't give away Wesley Snipes. He did Jungle Fever. All right, so today we're here to talk about the NBA Finals and the LeBron effect that has been happening over the last 8 to 9 years over the NBA right now. Before we get into the whole LeBron factor, what are your thoughts on the NBA Finals so far? O'Neal, I'll start with you.
Oh, I think it's fantastic.
Really? Okay.
My three favorite players are winning. I'm very happy about that. So it's going great for me. I'm enjoying it.
And what about you, Randall?
Well, I mean, I really don't got a dog in the fight because I'm not a fan of Golden State nor the Cavs. But you know what I mean? As the official representation of Team Lightskin, you know I got to go for my boys, right? So Splash Brothers are putting it on. And I like the controversy, but overall, I would have liked to see the Cavs put up more of a fight.
Yeah, I mean they're a little unarmed, of course. Other than LeBron, I mean, I would say Golden State probably has five of the six next best players on either side of the team. At least two of them are at least certified superstars. You know what I mean? So like it's gonna be hard for anybody to match up with that. Honestly, I feel like for me, it's weird. Like, I'm kind of disinterested in the finals. It's probably the most disinterested I've been since the first time LeBron faced the Spurs back in 2007. Like, I like the fact, there's a few things I do like about the series, though. I like the fact that Steph has been playing great, other than last night, of course. And you know, he was looking like he was gonna wrap up that his first Finals MVP, but now, you know, Durant's got a say in that now. The flow of the offense is going nice, but it's kind of like the same story. I think the Warriors are a juggernaut, and Cleveland's in the position of trying to play catch up. And then the whole narrative of how LeBron doesn't have enough help, you know, around him to succeed, yada yada yada. So it's like, it's the same narrative we've been hearing for the last, I would say, the last few years now. You know what I mean? So it's like, for me, once Game 7 happened in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, on both cases, I was like, I know Golden State's Cleveland's going to win again. And I kind of took like a side disinterest, just because I knew that if Cleveland won, that it's not going to, the series might maybe go five. It might go five at most. It might, you know. But I was expecting a sweep this year. And I think if Boston went, like, I think Boston overachieved once Kyrie went down. So the fact that they even made it to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, I thought was really good. But I know once they got to the finals, as great as Brad Stevens is and as great as he's had everybody playing together, it's still not going to be a match for Golden State at this point. You know? The reason why I want to get the two of you guys on this podcast is because I feel like watching this finals, I feel like you're really watching the result of the LeBron effect on the NBA in terms of player empowerment, in terms of super teams. And it's coming to a head now, where it's like every year the finals is kind of, you know, falling into the same kind of place. So I'll just ask this question. First off, you know, I know some of these LeBron fans or stands ain't gonna like this question too tough, but if the Cavs get swept tomorrow or they lose in five, is this LeBron James' fault? You know what? I'll ask it another way. I'm asking this question because of what happened in the summer of 2017, the fact that Kyrie left, and it's having an effect, of course, right now in this series. Did that not help the Cavs lose this finals this year? So, Randall, I'll start with you.
Essentially, you're asking if Bron is this last game is Bron's last game in the Cavs uniform.
No, I'm basically asking is this basically LeBron James' fault in the last 12 months with Kyrie leaving and the fact that they're getting swept?
No. I'll be honest. I consider myself now an old head, and what I mean by that, I think it's a generational gap, right? This is not my generation. I can't relate. Like, it's like when you listen to Shaq and all, that's another generation, you know, and Chuck, that's another generation gap for us. And we're always going to look down on the generation and dog them for the decision they make. I can't relate with this generation, right? Because I'm on the cusp of that generation right before. So this whole AAU culture, I mean, I can't relate to it, because when I was growing up playing ball, AU culture was just in its like infant stages, where it wasn't big as it is now, where you see these mega teams from grade 7 going up to, you know, senior year of high school, and it trickles now into, we're looking at college, look at Duke. That whole mega team thing, the mentality is everyone wants to play with their friends, right? There's no that competitive edge of, like, you know, I heard Chuck talking, I would never play with Michael Jordan. Right. And Michael Jordan said, I'll never play with Larry Bird. Magic was, me and Larry play together. That would never be a thought. That's out the window. I can't relate with this generation. So do I blame LeBron for it? No. Because, you know, I'm sure like it would have happened regardless.
You think so? Okay.
I think so. I just think it's a cultural thing. It's a generational thing. You know, I don't blame LeBron James. I think it's come to bite him in the ass, right? Because now it's coming back full circle, and he did it when he went to Miami. Everyone was pissed, you know, but that's what it is. You can't stop these players from choosing where they want to play if they're free agents.
Okay. And what are your thoughts, O'Neal?
I mean, I think we talked about this before, where one of the earlier podcasts, where I said, you know, I think it's LeBron's fault. I think It's his fault with Kyrie leaving, because, you know, when you have people leeching out of your camp that you're unhappy, or you're thinking about leaving, or you haven't re-signed, everybody sees that you haven't re-signed, and, you know, it's, what are you waiting for? So I think for Kyrie, it was, I'm not going to leave my future in your hands.
Right.
And so Kyrie dipped. And I think part of it, too, is, you know, it's, everybody's like, LeBron came back from 3-1. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? I watched the series. Kyrie dropped 38 in game 5 and 40 in game 6.
Right.
I'm not sure. And like, people just acting like Kyrie wasn't there. You know, and then LeBron had a chase down block, and that's all people talk about. And Kyrie hit the 3 to put them up by 3. So at the end of the day, if I'm Kyrie and he has the Mamba mentality where, you know what, I'm gonna go get my own team. And well, this is what I like about Kyrie and with the Mamba mentality. He's like, I'm gonna try my hardest to bring a team to win a championship. I'm gonna try to do what MJ did, when people said that he couldn't lead a team to a championship. I'm gonna try to do what Kobe did, when people said he couldn't lead a team to a championship. And that's why I love Kyrie. And plus, Kyrie's the only other superstar in the East. That's why LeBron's a smart dude. You know, you brought up earlier that the fact that you always seen Cleveland and Golden State in the finals, but at the end of the day, there's nobody at LeBron's level. Some of these guys would come over to the East, right? Like Paul George or somebody join another team, maybe join with Giannis.
Right.
You know, challenge LeBron in the East. Then you won't have LeBron go to the finals, because LeBron is smart, man. He's been in the finals the past 8 years. If you do the math, 82 regular season game plus another, well, you look at, they have to win 16. Some games go full 7. So you're looking at possibly over 100. You know, now granted, this is the only year LeBron's actually played 82 games. But still, you know, considering everything, he's playing a lot of games. LeBron ain't stupid. LeBron's facing himself. All he does is make sure he finishes in the top, what, 5, you know, makes the playoffs, because it's the East. So he doesn't have to overexert himself, just doing enough to make the playoffs. And this is what I don't understand as well. Like, people who watch the NBA, how quickly they forget that we all know that the playoffs is the real season. That's when the real season starts. So everything that happens in the regular season, you know, you can take it with a grain of salt. So for me, LeBron just paces himself and just goes to work in the playoffs. And so, but I do blame him for Kyrie leaving, because, you know, when he's 1 foot in, 1 foot out, not sure what he wants to do. You know, Kyrie's like, you know what? I got my chip. Now I'm going to go try and win a chip without you. And now you're seeing that LeBron needs another superstar. You cannot win without a superstar. Everybody can't be there praising LeBron. Or LeBron came back from a 3-1. Like Kyrie was chopped liver and didn't do nothing. You know what I mean? So now people see, and like, oh, who knows? LeBron might come back. I'm like, LeBron ain't coming back from 3-0, 3-1. He doesn't have that killer. And LeBron likes playing with other killers, because he could, again, take time off or rest, pace himself, and then take over when he needs to. So I do think it's LeBron's fault. Answer your question.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I think it's actually like, I think it's the one, it's probably one of the biggest mistakes other than the actual decision, televising that as a TV show. I think LeBron's biggest mistake, like, this whole decade was not mending that relationship between him and Kyrie last summer. Because, like, listen, who knows? Sorry, go ahead before I make my point. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, think about why didn't Scottie Pippen ever leave Jordan? Why didn't you ever hear about this with Scottie Pippen and Jordan? Because Jordan knew how to, you know, make his teammates feel appreciated, right? Mm-hmm. When Dennis Rodman came over for the second 3, you know, if you forget, don't forget that Rodman used to beat up on Jordan and Pippen when he was with the Bad Boys.
Right.
Yeah, but O'Neal, this is the thing you guys are misunderstanding, man. You can't. It's a different generational gap, man. Like the thing about it is, I don't think Bron and Kyrie ever got along, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't – do you blame that on Bron?
I don't know.
Let's call a spade a spade.
Actually, I do blame it on Bron.
How can you blame Bron? And I'm not a LeBron fan. I'm not a hardcore LeBron fan. I'm not by no means. But what I'm trying to say is, what I do know about Bron's a winner. regardless of what anybody says, he's a winner, and he knows how to win. Now, does he know how to win championships? You can't say that, but Golden State is a whole nother beast. But what I'm trying to say is, Bron knows how to hold players that play with him accountable, and he doesn't want to be – Kyrie didn't want to be held accountable like that. Kyrie, What has Kyrie done to be a leader?
What has he done to be a leader? Yeah. And you see what he did with Boston for the games before he was hurt? Everybody thought he was going to be a ball
stopper. Yeah, LeBron knows about – But hold on, O'Neal. That's like saying DeRozan was like, you know, you can't count regular season. You just said that.
What?
He hasn't had a sample size yet with Boston to prove that he would have. Who knows? Maybe with him there, they wouldn't have won those games.
Listen, I'm going to go by what I saw. And what I saw was when Kyrie was playing, he was a point guard who was facilitating and leading. He was leading his guys. He wasn't trying to jack up shots. He was running the show. He was controlling, as a point guard should do, he was controlling the tempo of the guys. He was bringing guys in huddle. He was talking to guys. He was leading. So that's why I said, that's why I feel the way I do, because I watched the games. I'm a big Kyrie fan. I watched him lead guys on the court. Everybody thought he was going to be a ball stopper, just come down and jack up shots. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, he never did that. There's some games where Kyrie just scored 22 points, and his team was winning. But he had like 8-9 assists. He was leading, and he took over when he needed to take over. I blame LeBron, because when you're the best player on the team, you're the leader. He's the leader of the team. He has to get guys. He has to figure out guys' work and make it work, which was my point with Dennis Rodman. Jordan and Pippen hated Rodman, but they knew this guy could help us, so you figure out how to make it work. You put all your grievances aside, and you work with the guy. You don't have to hang out after. You don't have to go to the club together.
No.
But you definitely, when you're on the court, you have a mutual goal. You figure it out. You work it out. You talk. And then you guys get on the same page, and you make things happen. I don't know if LeBron's a winner. I know that he hates to lose. He does not like to lose. And you know this because the minute things look like it's going to be downhill – he doesn't want to go through those losing seasons. He's ready to leave and go to another team. Jordan went through losing seasons. Kobe went through losing seasons. LeBron doesn't want to go through that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think he's a sore loser. If you look at his body language, go back through all the years when LeBron's losing. He's taking his shirt off before he gets to the change room. Look at a game against this last game with JR when JR's blunder. All right, you had a timeout. They didn't call it. Instead of freaking out and just shutting down, what I call a tantrum, you should have been like, oh, fuck it, let's go. We can still get this game. You know, what do we need to do? And then after, get into JR. So I question sometimes, you know, I think he's a sore loser. I don't think I think he's more of a sore loser. He hates to lose. And he doesn't ever want to experience losing. And sometimes, you know, what they say, you have to fail before you succeed. Sometimes it's good to lose, man. It really builds character. You know what losing is about. And then you go through, because I don't think he's ever lost since he was playing AAU in high school basketball. So I think the idea of losing really, really, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. He's a sore loser.
I'm going to jump in for a second, I'm going to jump in for a second.
Go ahead, Calvin. Yeah.
So for me, like I said, who knows what's going on behind the scenes between LBJ and Kyrie at the time. But like, I'm looking at it from the perspective of LeBron. I'm just thinking like big picture. Like if I'm LeBron James and I'm looking at my landscape, you know, for how my future may lie, I'm looking at the Western Conference. The Western Conference is super tough. And, you know, my narrative of continuing to build Cleveland from an economical standpoint, like he said in his letter back in 2014, and trying to build a champion from his hometown. You know, he already got one he got a ring for the city after 52 years. Now, if I'm looking at everything from that, I'm thinking keeping Kyrie beside me as a superstar and a top 10 talent, and the fact that he, at the time he's like 24, 25 years old, I'm thinking that's much more advantageous than having him not playing alongside me. Just and especially the fact that you actually won with him. You know what I'm saying? So you know it actually works. And case in point, I'm just going to show an example. Like after they lost in 2015 to the Warriors, the first time they went in the finals, and Kevin Love was a free agent back in 2015, and nobody knew if he was going to stay, if he was going to go. Remember, he missed. He didn't play most of the playoffs. it was found out afterwards that they met up in Las Vegas. I think they ran up into each other in one of them pool parties or something like that and had like a sit down and a powwow. And then shortly afterwards, Kevin Love signed a 5-year deal with no opt outs. So to me, I think it's a fair question to ask, why didn't he do the same with Kyrie? You know, here, like trying to nip that in the bud. Now, going forward from that trade, of course, like we had no idea that Isaiah Thomas wasn't going to be right and that they flipped the whole team over and everything else. But I don't think they were going to beat this version of Golden State, even if Kyrie stayed. But I mean, that trade once again is catching up with them. And you look at it from the finals perspective, like for starters, like you can no longer keep Steph busy on the defensive end of the floor. Like Steph is getting like free reign. Like last night, he just shot bad, but nobody's taking him out of his game. Whereas the last three finals, like shit, like it was hard for him to get totally off because fuck, he had to worry about Kyrie on the other side of the floor getting his too. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And that's a whole other mental approach. But when you're worrying about just like J.R. Smith and Kyrie Hill and George Hill and those guys, you know, when you're worrying about that, those guys, as a superstar, your mind is a little more at ease. You know what I mean? But so you don't have that threat. Like Cleveland doesn't have multiple creators like Houston did that's going to keep him honest. Like the last.
So hold on.
Yeah, sorry.
But let me ask you. I know what path you're going down, but let me ask you both a question. Or you see first. Do you think, and I think it comes down to more of it's perception reality, but do you think if Kyrie was on this team, they would have a chance to beat Golden State again?
Oh, no. Like I just answered before, I said no. I said, even if he was there, I don't think they were beating Golden State anyway. But I think having a superstar, top 10 talent that you've already won with, and he's much younger than you, that's probably one of the best assets to have. You know what I mean? Going forward, like in terms of looking at your future and trying to win, like you know you can win with Kyrie. You've done it. You know you can do it. So I think the actions of him not trying to mentor that relationship, because to me, like I said, you're right. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, if they ever got along or what have you. But if you're looking at a big picture perspective and championships and competing for that every single year and wanting to stay in your city, then trying to mend that relationship with Kyrie is super important. And I think that's like the underrated black mark on this season for him.
Yeah, I think the thing for me was, as I think about it, is like Kyrie, you guys lose. With LeBron again is when he loses, the first thought is let's break up the team. Where am I going to go? As opposed to, because if you have again, right, who not only takes big shots but he makes big shots, you don't want to get rid of a guy like that, as you're saying. So maybe you have to get rid of other guys. Maybe you get rid of Kevin Love and you bring somebody else in, right? But you know, like whoever, you know, this is where guys get creative and come up with creative trades and these blockbuster deals or, you know, make one of those trades or deals where nobody sees coming. But instead of just like, you know, seem like you're ready, as soon as you lose, it's okay, let's blow it up and start over, as opposed to, I would first work on keeping Kyrie. Then we figure out with Kevin Love and what are our options, you know, as far as who we could, why did we lose to Golden State? How can we fix it, right? Mm-hmm. Based on keeping Kyrie, myself, and say JR, right? Mm-hmm. How can we fix it? Because if you think about it, that's what Golden State did when they beat the Spurs. They studied the Spurs. The Spurs were kicking Golden State's ass. Mm-hmm. They studied the Spurs, and then they basically became a younger version of the Spurs. Quick ball movement and playing defense. They just studied the Spurs and shot a lot of threes, high assists, right? Averaging 30-something assists, right? So, you know, I just think that's what, you know, if I'm LeBron, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to study why did we lose as opposed to, oh, we lost, let's blow it up. Well, why did we lose? And based on the weapons that we have, assess our team and be like, okay, there's me. We got a gunner in Kyrie that's like, you know, just let him loose. We got JR, that's a wild card, but, you know, again, he can hit big shots. He can play D, right? So let's figure out how we can make this team better, who we can trade, who we can add, what we can draft picks, or whatever, as opposed to the first thought is, after you lose, well, let's, I'm going to leave.
Well, you know what, this one instead of you know what I think, and again, like, I'm not advocating for, I don't put the onus on Bron for Kyrie leaving. I think it's a collective thing with the organization. My perception of him leaving, to be honest, is I know like I have inside intel on playing with Braun, right? So I know what it's I got people that play with Braun, so I know, I've heard it's not easy playing with Braun, right? And I've heard he could throw tantrum. Everything you're saying, I'm in agreement with. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the organization that Braun has too much power.
Right. Yeah.
I don't blame Braun for like listen, if I had the power like that and I could dictate what I want, but someone has to put their foot down and say, listen, I run this squad. You don't.
Exactly.
And you're Braun, I will get the pieces to help you, right? Because now we look, we're not talking about Dan Gilbert. You think Masai Ujiri would let that happen? And maybe he would, but I personally think he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let Dan Gilbert or whoever it is do their job to bring in the players, and all you do is have to play. And if there's a problem with it, you sit down with Braun and you say, "Yo, you guys hash it out, because Kyrie, I don't want to trade you. Hash it out, because we need to. I'm gonna trade Kevin Love. I'm gonna get." I don't know. Let's say I'm going to bring in Paul George. I'm going to bring in DeAndre Jordan. I'm going to bring in pieces to help you out, right? And let's see where this goes. Because I agree. I wouldn't want to trade Kyrie. I think Kyrie is a valuable piece. You don't have point guards that just pop up like that in the league. But at the same time, like, I think all these players know that Braun runs the show and has all these demands and says that people don't want to go play with Braun anymore like they did before.
And on top of that too, you got to look at it like
this. I don't blame Kyrie.
No, but what I was gonna say, on top of that, you got to look at it like this too. The fact that, like I said again, I'm all for him in terms of the player empowerment, but how he's using it, it kind of cripples the franchise at the same time, because when you're looking at it from the perspective of like, okay, you know, I'm only signing like a one and one. You know what I mean? Like, I'm signing a 2-year deal, but I got an option after the first year. So you're always giving the threat that, you know what, if you're not trading and constantly putting certain players around me, I'm gone.
So you're always
getting rid of your assets. You're always getting rid of your young guys. You're always getting rid of certain people to try to fit LeBron's style, right? But in some cases, that's not going to always work. So that's why I didn't blame them for like not trading that pick they got from Brooklyn. Now, mind you, it ended up being the 8th overall pick for this year's lottery. But if I'm the GM for Cleveland, I'm not getting shitted on twice. You know what I mean? I gotta also look at the future too. I can't just worry about, like, as great as LeBron is playing right now, he's closer to the end than he is the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can't be looking at, oh, we gotta worry about LeBron for the next 5 years. He might not be here in 5 years, you know, physically, or you know what I mean? Like, we might not be here in 5 years, so we don't know. I want to move it on to the next question. Like, how this conversation is going, the direction of it right now. What is the main point that you would list on LeBron James' plaque, like, when his career is over, in terms of looking at this decade and the power that he's had over it? What is the, like, the one of the main point or points that you would put on his plaque?
Interesting. Top 10 player of all time.
Right.
I don't know. You know, he's obviously nothing he's ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I like the way his game is going now. I like the way he's playing, because, you know, he's taking some tough shots.
Mm-hmm.
But just a top 10 for me, man. I just put on his back one of the top 10 greatest basketball players ever.
To ever play.
That's what I put on his back. Yeah.
And I know you've been, I've been watching, like, we've been talking and stuff. Like, I know you've been kind of advocating for how he's been playing the last, like, this playoffs especially. Because when you look at it, he has kind of filled up some of the holes, like some of the remaining holes that he had in his game, you know. Randall, how would you answer that in terms of like what would you list? Because I got an answer for it, but I'll let you guys answer first.
You know, it's hard for me to say, like, if he's top 10 or top 5. But what I will say, I like what the path they're going down when you're saying what he would be classified as. But I would say he's the most dominant player of this generation.
Yeah, and I don't mean in terms of playing. Like, it could be, like, anything. But go on. Sorry, go on.
Yeah,
finish your
answer. Yeah, most dominant. He's the most dominant player. Like when I say dominant, it's like it's the same discussion with Shaq, right? Like, people are talking about, is Shaq the best of that era? Like, he's the most dominant player. Like, he may not win all the time, Bron, but like, you can't knock the fact, regardless of all his downfalls and all his shortcomings, you can't knock the fact the man has went to the finals like 8 straight years.
Okay.
Regardless if the East is weak, regardless of anything, this team has no business going to the finals. Bron put this team literally on his back.
Okay. For me to answer, I guess, my own question, I think the main point that I put on this plaque, and like I said, and this is something that's kind of been bouncing around my head watching these finals, is that he's, to me, it's really in your face now. Like, I think he is the king and the terms of ushering the era of player empowerment. To me, that's the most important thing that he's done for the NBA. And this entire decade has been a reflection of those movements ever since. And it's funny because it's changed the minds of the masses with regards to this. Like, remember when the decade started? And obviously, Randall, you can attest to this, being that, like, your cousin played for the Heat. People were killing LeBron James for hooking up with Wade and Bosh, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you got people throwing out ideas that LeBron James next year should join the Celtics in order to compete. Like, it's amazing to watch the evolution of people's thought process, honestly. Like, it's the craziest thing to me. You know what I mean? Because when the decade started, I remember when the decade started, I was like, I thought what LeBron did was smart in this sense. The fact that, A, it was a strong power play move in terms of player empowerment, even though I didn't like having a super team together. But like, I thought it was great in terms of power, like a power movement. But I thought the biggest thing too was, I'm like, you know what? I was like, yo, LeBron's really smart, because you know what? Time washes away everything. And kind of as time goes along, nobody's gonna care how the number came up to whatever the number came up with, as long as it results in championships.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you're seeing now, because now you talk to people and like, people are like, yeah, but was Wade and Bosh really that great though? You know, like, come on, they weren't Golden State. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they weren't really that great. But it's like, no, when he joined up with the Heat, Wade was a top 3 player. Bosh was a top 15 player. That completely changed the landscape of the NBA. Every move after that was because the NBA is a copycat league. And if the leader of the league is moving in a certain way, everybody's going to kind of mimic and reflect that. So going forward, it's like, okay, well, now I got to go get O'Neal. And I got to go get Randall, and I got to go get this guy, you know, for us to go be a superpower and compete now. So I think the AAU culture, as we were talking about earlier, as you mentioned earlier, is part of that. But I think for LeBron to do it, it really kicked everything into overdrive.
And it's
funny, like, the difference between, because I hate the Jordan and LeBron comparison. Like, I can't stand that conversation.
Yeah,
I really hate it. But like, the difference between LeBron and Michael Jordan is that as a player, LeBron James knows his worth, and he completely utilizes his power, and he acts accordingly. Like, in terms of what I was saying before, not signing any long-term deals, you know, keeping the cows in their toes, and the commitment to, you know, being a contender at all times. But there's a cause and effect to everything. And I think, like I said, players are in this belief now that they can't win unless they have like a minimum of 3-4 all-stars on the same team. Like, even Golden State, after winning 73 games, still went after Durant. Which, I mean, 20 years ago, that would have been impossible. The ripple effect of what LeBron James did is sprinkled over all of these finals in the next few years. Not just the fact that he's been there 8 times, but because trying to, you know, make an Avengers team kind of thing. It's like, it's changed the league. And I'm not sure if it's changing for the better, to be honest with you.
No, I agree with you. I don't think it's changed for the better at all. Right? I think it's kind of sad. Right. And again, the reason why I bring up AAU so much is because it's a different mindset. Like, these players know each other from the 8th, 7th, 6th grade.
Right.
Like, look, it's even getting worse now. I was down in the U.S. the other weekend, and it's almost like 5th graders getting ranked. Like these kids are all fighting. Even in Toronto, you're seeing teams now all amalgamating the best players to go down to U.S. and smash teams. And these kids end up playing each other for years.
Right.
I mean, and it's the same thing in the U.S. Like, teams like what Blue Chip and all these teams are coming up now, and they're taking all these kids from different states, making these mega teams, smashing kids. These kids grow up together. You don't think they're gonna gravitate saying, hey man, when I'm in the league, I want to play with you. Like, it's all the get along game. Well, we were growing up, I may not know O'Neal, right? I may be in Massachusetts, O'Neal may be in New York. I may heard of him, but I don't know him. But when I play him on the court, I'm gonna take his head off because I want to get his spot.
and that competitive edge has been watered down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you're right. Braun is the first to really take that to another level, right? To take that kind of friendship and that, you know, the banana boat theory and just put it in her face. Like, listen, I wasn't happy when Braun made that decision,
mm-hmm.
right? But at the same time, it's a business. And without the Jordans, without all these other players that came before us, how would Braun know to make certain business moves? Like, I respect his business savvy, but I mean, it is what it is. This is where we're at right now, right? And you know, I can't blame Durant because everybody wants to win. Nobody wants to be a Chuck, a Charles Barkley, right?
Yeah, like O'Neal was saying, right? Like, it's not everybody doesn't want to go through the path of losing and trying to figure it out and trying to win, right?
No, no.
There's actually, as you're right, like there's no honor. There's no honor anymore of being like a Barkley and a Malone. And I don't think there's anything wrong with those careers. Like, if you wake up, you know, and your career is over and you had the kind of career that Karl Malone had, or the same career that like Patrick Ewing had, or John Stockton had, or Charles Barkley had, like, I people have this indication that they had a loser type of career, which is like insane to me, you know?
Yeah, but it's further than that. See, this goes even back. This even goes deeper. This goes back into how kids are raised these days. With it's instant gratification. Everything is instant. You know, like
right.
I was just talking to my son the other day about you could, like, if I had a girl, right, and I was playing around with another girl, I could get away with that because it was pagers back then. I could ignore a pager, like, oh, hon, I couldn't get to a payphone. Nowadays, all these kids got cell phones. Everyone can reach it. Instagram, Facebook. I can't even name them all because I'm not on them all. But I can tell you right now, everybody wants something now. Everybody wants success now. Everybody wants something now.
Like I said, I think LeBron ushered in the super era, the super team era, and then player empowerment. But I think Golden State did a better job of it. And to obviously, as you said before, it's to his detriment of his own championship success. But it's a byproduct of the path that he set. So O'Neal, I'll ask you a question. So now that we've seen four consecutive finals with the same team and the principal players, do you think this is ultimately good for basketball?
You know what? I remember if you look in the 80s, you had the rivalry going on between the Lakers and the Pistons. You know, and then even before that, I think the Pistons and the Celtics. But even before that, the Celtics and the Lakers meeting in the finals and stuff like that. So, I mean, I would say if there's another, like next year, then I don't think it would be good for basketball. But, yeah, you always want to see something different. So, no, I don't want to see Cavs. I don't want to see Cleveland and Golden State again in the finals. So, I don't know if it's bad. I mean, let's say LeBron stays and he gets Paul George or something.
Right.
I'm sure people wouldn't mind seeing
how that works out.
Cleveland and, yeah, you know, somebody dethrone Golden State. Uh-huh. But I just think it's because right now it's just one-sided. That's why people's mad. But if it's compelling where, you know, it's like people want to see juggernauts go up against each other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure – you know, like in boxing, how many times did people want to see Foreman and Ali or Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard go at each other? How many times did they fight each other? So, yeah. You know, like if LeBron wants to stay in, like I said, get Paul George and, you know, somebody else who's out there. And I'm sure people wouldn't mind seeing a Cleveland or the state. But if it's just one-sided, I don't think it's good for basketball at all if it's one-sided.
Okay. And what about you, Randall?
No. No, not at all, man. Because it's nobody wants to. It's like a movie. Nobody wants to spend their money to know what the ending is going to be like. We all kind of had that idea it was going to be Golden State. Like, that's why everybody. The novelty this year was everybody was rooting for the Celtics to win, and everybody was rooting for Houston to win.
Yeah,
just to see something different, to see another era. You know, someone push that juggernaut team. To the limit,
right?
I mean, we're talking about LeBron. We haven't even talked about the logistics of what's going on in the series, really, of the series at all. Because I could tell you, I'm not really interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm along kind of like along the same thing with you guys, where it's like I said, I'm for player movement. I'm always pro player, but I feel like I'm not sure if this is a great thing for basketball. Like anything else, like life evolves and adjusts to the circumstances of events. And you know, you're starting to see the example of that in the NBA now, with how Houston was put together now, and with how Boston is being built for now and the future. You know, as well as teams that like Philadelphia and such. But if you're a fan of the game, you know, unless, like, say you're the Raptors, for example, like a Raptors fan, unless you have three all-star, superstar-type players, you ultimately don't stand a chance in the grand scheme of things. My thing is, you don't want the sport to trend into the baseball route where the season is essentially done by the new year. Like, for me, but I'm, like, watching these finals, even though, like, I'm a basketball junk. I know for myself, I'm already kind of fatigued by seeing these teams again these last 4 years, even though I enjoy watching the hell out of Golden State. And, you know, I'll wrap up the podcast soon with this question here. I guess I will do the one Jordan comparison here in this case. If LeBron ends up going 3-for-9 in finals appearances, because that's where it's trending to right now, can we, like, forever squash this Jordan comparison? Or is it going to be like everybody else in the media? Are you still going to crown them as the best ever player? O'Neal, what are your thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, the people that keep bringing it up are LeBron sexuals, LeBron stans that keep bringing it up. So for me, it's been done a long time ago. They bring it up, and then they try to disrespect Jordan and demean Jordan by saying stupid shit. Mm-hmm. So that's why I get upset, and that's why it's always here, because, you know, LeBron stans and sexuals will try to say that he's better than Jordan. They try to demean whatever he's done, act like, you know, this is something that's done on a regular basis. So, you know, squashing it, LeBron fans will never squash it. So it's always going to be around. Because to me, in my mind, he hasn't passed Kobe. I'm like, when he's going to Kobe for advice and he's studying Kobe, and then when they're playing against each other and Kobe's shooting 60% and LeBron's shooting 27, 30%, when they're actually guarding each other, you know, people are like, well, his teams win. I'm like, yeah, because his teams are, he had Wade and Bosh. His teams are better than Kobe's team. Kobe ran with freaking bums, and he won 2 chips. So at the end of the day, LeBron has even passed Kobe. So it's always going to be around as long as you have LeBron sexuals or freaking delusional and see things one way.
Randall, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why Bron is the most dominating player of this generation. But like O'Neal said, you can't disrespect Jordan. And I wasn't even a Jordan fan back then, because I was a Knicks fan.
Right.
So really and honestly, like, to me, LeBron is like the Buffalo Bills of the early 90s. Great team. Great, you know, they're always in contention, but they just can't do it. And that will always be the black mark on Bron, right? Like, he can't close. And the only time he really, I think that one chip that he won with the Cavs will be, like, on that plaque. Because other than that, he lost stripes with winning chips with Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't foresee him winning any more chips with Cleveland. So I think he's going to leave.
Yeah, I think I'll throw some stats at you guys real quick. So, like I said, LeBron is 3-for-9, right? So,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to mention a couple of stats here. So, Jordan went 6-for-6. We all know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Magic went 5-for-9. Jordan mm-hmm. Bird went 3-for-5. Kobe mm-hmm. went 5-for-7. Five mm-hmm. out of seven, you know, five titles and seven tries. Shaq, you know, went to the finals 6 times, 1-4. Duncan went 6 times, only lost once.
Uh-huh.
So how do you put somebody who's 3-9 as the undisputed best player of all time? Like, if it's possible that he's the best ever with that kind of finals record, then Will Chamberlain then should be considered the best ever because of all the stats he accomplished in his 16-year career, and he went something like 2-for-4 in the finals appearances. Like,
but see, the thing that's the anomaly here is Bron went 8 straight years.
Yeah, I know, but so did Bill Russell, and he won all 8.
Bill Russell wasn't the flag, wasn't the marquee player of the squad. It was a sum of all parts.
No, but he was the guy. He was the defensive guy, but he was, everything revolved around what he did. even though he wasn't dropping 30. You know what I mean? Like, it everything revolved around, like, what he did. Like, for you to hold that kind of record and to be the and also be the greatest basketball player of all time, I think you have to be way better than everybody else to kind of carry that. And he's not. And it's funny. Like, even all the new analytical stats and stuff back up Jordan as being the better player between the two. But I'll say – and I'll say – I've said this before, and I'll say this again. Just because LeBron James isn't better than Michael Jordan – it should not be considered like a knock on him. It shouldn't be considered a slight to his career. He's a great player. He's the best of his generation. Just leave it as it is. Like, it's the popular narrative, but honestly, Randall O'Neal, I hate it just because I've watched both careers, and to see time erode people's memories of Jordan, especially before his first retirement, because I've always said, like, the version of Jordan when they played Phoenix Suns and he averaged 41 points in the finals, that to me was like, and again, I'm not a Jordan fan. I'm the Magic. My guy's Magic Johnson. But like, watching that version of Jordan, to me, I said it when I was like 14 years old. I'll say it now. That I've never seen a better basketball player. Like, that was like the perfect basketball player, because that guy wasn't just, he still had all of this athleticism, but now he knew how to win. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he was incredible on both sides of the floor. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you look at it from this perspective too. Like, how can you bring a record of 3-9 of a guy that went 6-for-6 and three-peated twice in the same decade? You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't leave his team to join, you know, with top 15 talents to get it done. And and look at it from this perspective too. Like, once Jordan started winning, the only one who ate in that decade was Hakeem. And that's because Jordan was away. Like, I don't think Jordan would have won 8 straight titles, but like the facts are facts. Like, only Hakeem Olajuwon won 8. But yet, we're saying this guy's the best player of all time. And again, this is not a knock on him, but like, this is factual.
Who's saying bronze?
Well, you hear people say that all the time, right? Like,
yeah, LeBron's sexual.
You're hearing that stuff, right? But like, okay, so I'm just saying the example. If you're saying LeBron's the best player of all time, how is somebody like Steph Curry winning 3 rings off of him alone in this decade, where LeBron is the best player, and is trending to end the decade with a 4th? You know what I'm saying? So, so to me, I'm like, you can't be considered that when other people are eating off your plate.
I agree.
That's just me. I don't know, but like I said, but when I like the closing thoughts is like, I just look at this entire finals. I don't even care about the result because we all know Golden, in this conversation, we all know Golden State was gonna win, but. And win pretty easily. But I'm just looking at, wow, look like the effect of what's happening with LeBron, like I said, it's basically kicking them in the face. I don't know if you want to call it karma or what have you, but like, the player empowerment thing is great, but this is the cause and effect of it now. It's biting him in the ass, but you know, at the end of the day, like, this is what it is now. Like, this is now this, like, I'm wanting to see if something else happens where this is not the new normal anymore. You know what I mean? Where, like I said, like a Kyrie comes in and wins, or, you know, James Harden with Chris Paul and a bunch of strong role players coming in and win, and see if that kind of starts reversing some of the things that are happening here. Like, it's interesting to see. I'm completely all for utilizing your power, but I think, as you said earlier, Randall, like, I think too much power is maybe not the best thing in the world if we can't handle it correctly. And you know, like I said, again, I think this finals is like a representation of all of that, you know, of all of that. So just in closing, guys, once again, thank you guys for coming on the podcast today. It was an honor to have you.
No doubt.
Having this conversation. You know, I know both of you guys have different type of programs, and I know, O'Neal, you're training and stuff. So I want to give you guys like a couple of minutes to plug your stuff. O'Neal, I'll start with you. Like, what do you got going on? Is there anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
Oh, definitely. So I'm part of what's called the Skill Refinement Group. Myself, Patrick Williams, Kevin Messiah. We do training out of Oakwood Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 5 to 7, 7 to 9. Earl Hag, 10:30 to 12:30, 1 to 3. And then we're running our summer program all summer long, 8 weeks. 7 weeks, full day camps, half day training. And you know, I like to brand ourselves as not trainers, but teachers of the game. And we don't say camps, we say experience, because we don't run, when we do our training, we don't run like normal basketball camps. We run it differently.
Okay,
so that's what's up.
Randall, what is anything you want to plug before we go?
Just, you know, it's not so much a plug. It's just, it, you know, it, it's great to see. We talk about generations, right? A lot. I talked a lot today. I love the fact when you hear guys like O'Neal and, you know, guys giving back to you know, they got the experience. They know the ins and outs of the game. You know, the generations before didn't have the tools or the experience that we did. So now giving back to these kids, you're seeing it come to fruition, and it's a beautiful thing, right? And, you know, I'm proud to be part of the breakdown program. You know, three of our teams going from 2005 all the way up to 2000, and I believe two or three, have all won the OBA championships and winning in different venues like Signature League and CYBL. And furthermore, you know, we have one of our squads fighting for a chance to represent our country in the Junior NBA Championships.
Okay.
So I believe that game is going to be happening June 16th, or that qualification. And keep your ear close to the media to find out what happens. But I think we have a good chance of representing our country down in the world, Junior World.
Okay, that's what's up. And before we go, recently we lost someone that's dear to us, to the Ryerson community. We lost somebody way too soon, and somebody that myself and O'Neal know, we knew him very well and was a part of our lives at some point, a brother by the name of Earl Frazier Jr. So my deepest condolences goes to his family and his loved ones, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. Shout out to you, Slinky, if you're listening. He was one of the great freak athletes that I had a chance to witness. And I honestly, to this day, I don't know how he got such a powerful bounce from those legs, especially from his size, but he did. But more than that, though, he was an all-around good brother, man. Somebody that always showed me love no matter what, no matter how much times, like how much time it's been since we've seen each other. We only got to play half a season together. But as you guys both know, you know, sometimes you share bonds with teammates that can last a lifetime, right? And with that said, O'Neal, you know, I know you had the opportunity to coach both myself and Errol. And at this time, I kind of want to step back and give you the space to share some words about Errol before we go.
You know what? Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that. I'm not going to talk too long because I'll start, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I'll make it through the podcast. It's so emotional for me because, you know, Errol was... you know, there's so much stories of Errol, but I'd like to say that he was Westbrook before Westbrook. He was so explosive. And a quick story of Errol, I remember we were playing Brock, and, you know, it was a bit late. Usually one of our guys there 45 minutes before the game. Errol was there he showed up about 30 minutes, and he was angry, and he was like, I guess he got into an argument with his mother or something. And, you know, Errol, you know, even though I think he was born here, I call him a freshie because, you know, he's the guy that carries his wallet in his front pocket. And, Errol changes and he comes out with his ashy legs and church socks, like literally church socks. And he just went out and gave Brock 40 points. Just like that. Baseline to baseline, couldn't stop him. They're trying to double team him, blowing through the double team, pull up jump shot. He was just a natural basketball player. It was so easy for him, you know, and, you know, but he was, like you say, he was overall a great person. Like, I love the spirit. I never ever saw him angry. You know, he was always happy, always smiling. You know what I mean? And he always had that, you know, the bad boy skank. So, you know, I just want to tell him that I love him. And, you know, it was very heartbreaking to hear. My condolences to Keisha and his two daughters, Kayla and Chloe. And, yeah, man, we lost a good one. You know, we lost a really great person and a great human being. So rest in peace.
Yeah, on that note, brothers, thank you. Thank you, O'Neal, for the kind words. And thank you guys for coming on this podcast.
No doubt. Anytime.
No doubt.
Thank you all for tuning in to the AV Podcast. I'm truly, truly grateful for lending me your ears. Special shout out goes out to Randall Walter and O'Neal Kamaka for coming on the AV and sharing what they have to say about the NBA Finals and the LeBron effect. Continued success for both of these guys going into their summers. With that said, I can't help but see how everything's playing out in these finals, the effects of the moves that the greatest player of his generation, LeBron James, has done to change the NBA for better or for worse. And the fact that it's coming back on him is one thing, but it seems like this super team era, it ain't going away for a while, man. And it's going to be real interesting to see how these things play out over the next few summers. Is it going to regress to the mean a little bit? Or is this now just the trend forever now? Like, is it just going to forever be cemented for good? I know it's been going on for the last 5 to 8 years or what have you, but I mean, is this it? Is this how the NBA is going to be, you know, for the next 50 years? One thing for sure, we're all going to find out together. That's for damn sure. You can catch all of the South Shore Ave shows wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. And make sure you subscribe to that and to check out the Foundation website and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Randall Walter and O'Neal Kamaka, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace. We out. Once again, rest in peace, Dean Kelly and Al Frazier. One love.